It's the first episode of the new year, 2022, where it's a new year and the rules, well, they kind of stay the same, at least in Ontario. We'll go over that a little bit, talk about what's happening with the Edmonton Oilers and the incredible story between the Vancouver Canucks and the Seattle Kraken. All coming up on episode 114 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Welcome into a brand new year. That's right, 2022 is upon us. And thanks for tuning in weekly here to the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Grimard, your host as always. And yeah, it's a brand new year, 2022. Here's the hope that this is the last year we got to put up with this nonsense, or at least have to tiptoe around doing what we've had to do for the last almost two calendar years, going on three as of March. But you know what? We're going to focus on as much positivity as we possibly can. As always, follow along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. We got to break into it. Ontario going to be moving some rulings around, as no fans are going to be in attendance for Canadian games, at least for the next couple of weeks or so. We got to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. They have lost 8 of 10 games. What is happening to them? Exactly what I said would happen at the beginning of the season before they got off to a hot streak and have now cooled very much so off. Canucks and Seattle Kraken, they have an incredible story that went viral over the last couple days. We'll get into that too. And the outdoor game between the Minnesota Wild and St. Louis Blues. Hopefully y'all didn't miss that one, because that was a heck of a game. And of course, Alex Ovechkin crossing off another record on the road to continuously overturning the thought process of being the greatest goal scorer in the history of the NHL. Because there are still some people that are holding on to it and still saying that it's Gretzky. And listen, by all means, he's got a lot of goals, but based on the era and what he's doing, and it's unbelievable. So we'll talk about that as well. But we'll start with the new ruling here in Ontario, as the government has announced capacity limits for the next 3 weeks, including schools going online for a couple weeks, indoor dining is closed, gyms and big concerts and events and whatnot will, at one point it was going to go down to 50% capacity, and then that rule got changed like 3 days later to now no fans for the next little bit, while the Omicron variant continues to be a thing and spread a little quicker than what a lot of people are accustomed to. I thought long and hard about this, and I wish this is something that we did earlier, but at the time, this was a lot more deadly. I'm going to try and not talk about this as much as possible. I just want to quickly start this thing off. The nice thing about this is that the strains are getting weaker, and it seemed to be passing through a lot quicker. Here's hoping the next 2 to 3 weeks shoot by, and we can get back to fans in the arenas. It was so funny because there was a meme that was shared between the Toronto Maple Leafs and Edmonton Oilers and the Ottawa Senators on Saturday night. And then there's a photo of that in Carlton the Bear, the mascot for the Leafs, in the crowd where there's no one. And then it just, meanwhile in the States, and it's Minnesota St. Louis playing an outdoor game with like a record 37,000 fans in attendance for it. And it was Andrew Raycroft that tweeted and said, same league. And that was all he had to say. So, I don't know. I mean, we have open and close here in Ontario like 4 times now. I feel really bad for small business owners. What I'm hearing is that this new strain is not nearly as deadly. People are just getting cold flu-like symptoms and then they're moving on from it. So that's a positive, but we've said this about a million times. Here's the last time I hope I ever have to say it. Here's hoping after this shutdown, we'll be open for good. So just no fans going to be in attendance. It's the same thing across other leagues, including the Ontario Hockey League. Working with a team in the league, I'm not going to be able to be the in-game host. I will be doing the post-game stuff, but Ontario is just shutting it down. It makes more sense because they're kids, but the NHL, I don't know. It's getting to a point now where if you're double vaccinated and you got your booster or whatever, you should be good to go. If you get it, stay home for a couple days, like a cold, get it out of your system, and then go back to everyday life. But beforehand, it was a lot more severe. Now I'm hearing a lot more and more people are either close contact or getting it. But anyways, that's all the quote politics, as people call it, I'm going to really talk about here. But it's a global pandemic. It's not going to not be talked about, and it's clearly affecting the sport that this podcast covers. So I got to bring it up at least at the very beginning here for Ontario. Capacity limits for the next few weeks or so. I believe January 26th is the date, or 25th. One of those two dates will be the official date. 26th, because it kicks off tomorrow, Wednesday, June the 5th. All right, let's kick things off here. We're talking about a team that ultimately has fallen off a cliff, and their latest loss came against a team that is very much treading in the right direction. And I'm talking about the only game in the NHL last night, the New York Rangers and the Edmonton Oilers. New York is now at the top of the Metropolitan Division. They have the tiebreaker over the Washington Capitals, who are they are 22-8-4. Washington is 26-8. Both have 48 points. But right now, the Rangers have, they're not like they're on a hot streak right now. Everyone would think, oh, like the Rangers are just absolutely flying right now. Over the last 10, they're 5-4-1. They have not been playing great hockey recently, but they've won three straight after going into a little bit of a slump, and all of a sudden are now ahead of, now mind you, they played three more games than Carolina, who are only 1 point behind, and their head-to-head games against Washington could be washes. The Washington has lost technically 14 games if you include the overtime and shootout losses. And Pittsburgh's right on their tail, and they've played three less games too. But the Rangers are trending in the right direction. Paul Biznasty, Bissonnette, basically called him a wagon. Said, get on board now before the train's too full. But at the beginning of the year, if there was a team I said that I thought could not live up to expectations and disappoint. And that team was the Edmonton Oilers. Now, they got off to this really hard start. They were looking good. They were playing well. They've lost four straight. They're 2-6-2 in their last 10. Despite the fact that they have two players on your team that are going to account for roughly 260 points total. Why did I think they were not going to live up to expectations? Well, for the very two reasons that they are currently treading water. They traded away parts of their defensive core to bring in forwards. And secondly, they didn't address their goaltending. They brought in Duncan Keith, who costs a lot of money. They traded away Ethan Bear, who is a right-shot young defenseman, who, by the way, is thriving in Carolina. He's thriving in Carolina. Shocker. A lot of players thrive in Carolina, though. But Edmonton traded those away. Mike Smith was hurt, and their only other option at the time was Mikko Koskinen, who Dave Tippett, the head coach, gave the puck away behind the net, and the puck went to Lafreniere, and he buried it. And Dave Tippett came out, just ripped him apart, said it was just, it was absolutely asinine move that he did. Just said, like, it basically was the tipping point for the team. But I'm looking at their team stats right now. They're top 10 in goals. They have the number one power play. Their power play scores on almost a third of their chances, 30.5%. But this is where you struggle. Goals allowed, 3.24. It's 22nd in the league. Shots on goal, nearly 33 a game, 26th in the league. Penalty kills, middle of the pack. That's kind of all they got going for them. These are their goaltending stats right now. Mikko Koskinen, who has the better of the two stats between the two goaltenders. Koskinen's played 20 games, Mike Smith has played 5. Koskinen has a 3.19 goals against and barely a .900 save percentage. Mike Smith has a 3.91 goals against average and an .897 save percentage. Remember that Zach Hyman stat at the beginning of the year where he was just tearing it up? He now has 1, 2, 3 assists in his last 9 games. Now, it's a blip, and I still think Hyman will be fine and all that. But Darnell Nurse is not putting up nearly as many points as he used to. Tyson Barry now only has 17 points in 33 games. Evan Bouchard's kind of taken him over there. Ethan Bear was traded for Warren Fogle. Warren Fogle has 11 points in 33 games. Kyler Yamamoto only has 11 points in 33 games. It's McDavid, Draisaitl, 53-52, and then Nugent Hopkins with 26. 23 of those points are assists. He has 3 goals on the year. Unfortunately for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, along with the fact that he's just getting points on the power play, 14 power play points, and 23 of his 26 points are assists. It's a lot of guys. Adam Fox is a great example. Adam Fox in the New York Rangers, he's only got 5 goals, but he has 30 assists because he sets everything up and they're normally not secondary assists. He's also a defenseman. Now, I'm not going the whole, because Adam Fox is one of the best defensemen in the league. But this was the problem outside of McDavid Draisaitl. And you know what's even scarier for Edmonton? Is they re-sign Nuge. Puljujarvi's 4th on the team in points with 23. They signed Zach Hyman to a 7-year, $5.5 million contract. They traded for Warren Fogle. They re-signed Tyson Barry. I'm looking up and down this team, and there are some players that have played some minutes for him. Ryan McLeod's played some minutes for him. Devin Shore, Kyle Turris, all these guys have played minutes and games for him and have 2 or 3 points respectively, but yes, it's easier said than done spreading out the offense and having more than McDavid Draisaitl. Now, mind you, they've split them up, and the first line is McDavid, Puljujarvi, Hyman. And then it's Draisaitl, Yamamoto, Fogle. Remember a time when Leon Draisaitl and Kyler Yamamoto had this like weirdly great chemistry together? What happened to that? What happened to Kyler Yamamoto? I remember watching him during games and just being, he's like what, 5'9", 5'8", and he's just a nuisance. He's a pest. He is on you like right. He does not let you go. He's only really got what, like 11 points this year? Your third line center now is, this is where everything just kind of falls off. After those top two lines, and mind you, right now on the injury list, you know, a couple names are out there. Oscar Klefbom, obviously, Chris Russell, Zach Kassian's on the COVID list, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is not there. So when Ryan Nugent-Hopkins comes back, McDavid goes up and plays with, or I believe Draisaitl goes up and plays with McDavid. Or he stays on the line, he plays with Draisaitl on the second line. But there needs to be some balance in this offense. You got to find a way to put some guys on third line. Take off a Warren Fogle and put him on the third line. Get Kyle Turris up there. You know, when Nuge comes back, get Kassian in the top two. And those are two top six forwards. I get it. But I've seen other teams. Vegas didn't have Pacioretty or Stone or Carlson for a bit. Those are like their 3 of their top players. But Chandler Stephenson stepped up. Finally, Jack Eichel's going to be in the lineup soon, right? We'll quickly talk about that before the end of the show too, but the one thing I said for the Oilers going into the season and why I thought they could disappoint was that they didn't address the two glaring areas that they needed to address. They actually got worse on defense, though calling up Evan Bouchard's been great for him. But you traded away Ethan Bear. You brought on, you know, a guy who does not have the defensive fortitude he used to have in Duncan Keith. And your goalies are a 40 or 41-year-old Mike Smith and an overpaid backup in Mikko Koskinen. So yeah, McDavid and Draisaitl could put up 3 points apiece in a game. But if you're losing 5-3, 5-4, it doesn't matter. So goaltending is just, it's obviously the main area. And then if you can add a defender at some point, but that is 100% and will continuously be because it wears on you after 82 games. You're a guy and you look at your stats and you're going to have 100 points by the time the 50-55 game Mark rolls around and your team's out of a playoff spot. The Kings are 1 point back. Remember the Vancouver Canucks that were atrocious at one point? Vancouver's 2 points back. 2 points back. They've only played one more game. San Jose's 3 points back. The Kings could leapfrog the Oilers, and the Oilers are 2 points behind Calgary. Calgary has three games in hand. Now, the Ducks have two games in hand on the Oilers, but the Oilers have slipped 18-13-2. Not what you thought when you had two players who were rivaling to put up 260 points by the end of the year. It's going to be start and network your way out. That's how you fix the team. And they didn't address it in the offseason. And this is what I said. I said they might disappoint you. And they got off to this really hot start. And everyone was like, oh, Kyle, you were wrong about the Oilers. Yeah, I'm right now, though. Okay, I want to get to this incredible story involving the Vancouver Canucks and the Seattle Kraken because it just absolutely exploded when it happened. So on Saturday afternoon, the Vancouver Canucks shared a letter from their assistant equipment manager, Brian Red Hamilton, who explained his situation. He said, announcement, I am trying to find a very special person and I need the hockey community's help. To this woman I am trying to find, you changed my life. And now I want to find you and say thank you so very much. Problem is, I don't know who you are or where you're from. I do know that you were sitting behind the Canucks bench on the night the Seattle Kraken played their first ever home game. That evening, October 23rd, and the message you showed me on your cell phone will be forever be etched into my brain and has made a true life-changing difference for me and my family. Your instincts were right, and that mole on the back of my neck was a malignant melanoma. And because of you, and thanks to your persistence and the quick work of our doctors, it is now gone. I want you all to know that this isn't about me. It's about an incredible person taking the time to notice something concerning and then finding a way to point it out during the chaos of a hockey game. Going to great lengths to get my attention from the stands while I did my job on the Canucks bench. We are looking for this incredible person, and we need you to share this with your friends and families to help us find a real-life hero so I can express my sincerest gratitude. Well, amazingly, after that post got shared by Vancouver, it got reshared by Seattle. Within 2 hours of the team tweeting out his letter, a Kraken fan Facebook group identified Nadia Popovici to be that fan. And they found her and everyone started freaking out. So she is a 2019 college graduate who will soon be attending medical school. Had no idea what was going on. And actually had no idea that the Canucks search was happening because she worked a crisis hotline overnight on the Friday. She said, quote, I woke up with my mom's phone call and she said, Nadia, you have no idea what's going on. Sent me the statement from the Canucks and it said they were looking for me. There was a lot of screaming. Couldn't believe it. Hamilton had more to say about her basically on Saturday afternoon, but this was the incredible part of the story. So afterwards, they found her. They made this big statement. They made this big announcement at the game. The Canucks and the Kraken then teamed up to help fund Popovici's medical school tuition with a sizable scholarship of $10,000, which is just incredible. There was this huge thing. It basically took over the day Saturday. And I was seeing all these people sharing about it. I'm like, what is going on? I was following along with the story and following along with it. And eventually, I kind of caught myself up on it, read up on a little bit more, and realized what had happened. And the fact that this guy took to Saturday to make this big letter post, because I feel like he guessed that she was a Seattle resident or some part of, she meant something to Seattle. She was there for a reason. She was at the game and decided to post it right before the game from the Canucks and the Kraken. And just, if there was a positive note to take at the end of the year and go into 2022, this was the story. Girl finds a mole on an assistant equipment manager. Guy reaches out. They find the girl. She's a student going to medical school that costs a lot of money. The two NHL franchises team up. They then put 10 grand in her pocket. And it's the kind of start, the positive start we need for 2022. And just an incredible one. If you haven't seen it yet, I have shared it up on the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast Instagram and Twitter page. It's a great read if you want to go find it as well. All right. Well, Alexander Ovechkin did it again. Funny enough, in very anticlimactic fashion. But the Caps superstar moved past Dave Anderchuk this past Friday night for the most ever power play goals in NHL history.
Evgeny Kuznetsov to Backstrom. Backstrom doesn't try to sauce pass there. Ovechkin and here comes the shot by Alex Ovechkin. The man still in the penalty box, and here comes the shot.
Ovechkin fired home a goal as the power play was expiring. Now, the reason that this was so anticlimactic was when he scored at home, there was 1 second left, and he gave the Capitals a 3-1, led them to a 3-1 victory, was credited with the 275th career goal on the power play. The official scorer had initially ruled that it came with the power play, but then later in the night changed it to even strength. Someone was like, ah, he didn't get it. But then after the game, the league reviewed the play again and then reversed it again, which then officially gave him the record. So the league leaders of all time. So Alexander Ovechkin, 1,230 games, 275 power play goals. Dave Anderchuk, 1,639 games, 274. Brett Hull, 1,269 and 265. Timo Salani with 1,451 games played and 255 goals. And Luke Robitaille had 1,431 games and 247 power play goals. Ovechkin has wildly done more than almost done a third of his damage from his, quote, office. On the power play, you know, Gretzky has the office behind the net. His is from the left hash marks to the right circle. And he just, it's one of those things where as soon as he first started doing it, a lot of teams, quote, adapted. But Washington always had so many more skill players on their team that if he doubled Ovechkin or took a guy away from Ovechkin, it then became a very short 4-on-3. And yet at the time you had Mike Green and you had Nicholas Backstrom and Alexander Semin, and then things had progressed. And then there was John Carlson, and you've got now Evgeny Kuznetsov and TJ Oshie. It's a friggin' nightmare to deal with. So you go, I can't leave TJ Oshie or Nicholas Backstrom or Evgeny Kuznetsov or John Carlson all alone. So then you adjust them. And the moment you adjust, it's over Ovechkin in the back of the net. It's insanity. And the dude just keeps racking up the goals. He's got 24 on the year now, which is just 36 years of age. And he's one goal away from being the Rocket Richard leader for the time being. It's absolutely miraculous. He also added an empty net goal, so he had two on the night. But his first goal during that game, funny enough, stood as the game-winning goal. And it's the 119th career game-winning goal of his career. He passed Phil Esposito for third most game-winning goals in NHL history. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Appreciate greatness. Appreciate the history that is being made, whether it's in the NHL or in the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever the case may be. Appreciate greatness. Appreciate what you are seeing from Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Appreciate the fact that 36-year-old Alexander Ovechkin is going to be fighting tooth and nail till the end of the season for the Rocket Richard Trophy. Appreciate the fact that a record that none of us ever thought would have been broken, though I've been thinking this for the last 10 years, has a real chance. And even Gretzky's come out and said, he goes, I'm watching him and it's a matter of time. Like, it's a matter of when he breaks it now. And that is, that's the most impressive part. And the better part about it is that Alexander Ovechkin signed a 5-year extension this past offseason. He has the remainder of this year and 4 more years to eventually do it. I think that, like, that's absolutely the goal for him. At some point, he'll pull a Jager and go play in Russia. He's like 45, 46. But mark my words, this dude is a freak of nature athlete. He's not stopping. If you think tomorrow, oh, you know what? The NHL is actually going to figure out how to stop Ovechkin. The guy's been doing it for like 16 years. No one's stopping it now. It's been around long enough. If someone would have stopped it, it would have been stopped. But it's not, and all you can do is sit and watch and enjoy and appreciate greatness as he continues to climb the chart. I believe by the end of this year, he'll be third all-time in goals, possibly even second if he really ramps it up and he really has an incredible pace. But Gordie Howe is just over the 800 mark, and then it's on to 894, where that sits Wayne Gretzky. And that record at some point, I think, is coming to a close soon, and it's going to be held by none other than Alexander Ovechkin. There was an outdoor game I quickly want to talk about as well. The St. Louis Blues, Minnesota Wild. The Blues, if you saw, by the way, they got off the bus and they were wearing all like their Hawaiian shirts and like their super short shorts, and they just made it a scene. It was freezing outside. It was, the temperature was below zero for the in terms of the US. I believe it was around minus 20 or minus 21 outside in Celsius for Canadians listening. Blues raced out to a big lead. Minnesota kind of came back into it, but ultimately the St. Louis Blues held on for a 6-4 victory. Jordan Kyrou had 4 points in this game, including 4 in the second period alone. Jordan Binnington made 29 saves. This is a wild stat for the Blues. They are 11-1-2 in their last 14 games against Minnesota. Like, that is not a rivalry. That's a shellacking. 11-1-2. They have picked up points in 13 of the last 14 games they played the Wild, which is insane considering how good the Wild have been. Didn't they win their division last year in the shortened season? Incredible stuff. Perron also got on the board. Tarasenko, Barbashev, and Torrey Krug joined Jordan Kyrou in the scoring in the second. Robert Thomas had a couple assists in that game too. For the Wild, Kirill Kaprizov had a goal and 2 assists. On top of that as well, Ryan Hartman got on the board along with Kevin Fiala and Rem Pitlick. They made it close with like less than a couple minutes left, but at the end of the day, this was a win. But the big thing was the fact that 37,000 fans outside, in the cold, freezing cold. I think there was a stat that showed that this was the first of 33 outdoor games the league has ever played with a temperature below zero, which doesn't sound that impressive because it was in January on the first, but you got to remember there was a lot of games that were held outside in March that were in like Los Angeles and Anaheim and some very warm cities over there. So it was really cool to see. It was kind of the throwbacks. You saw Cam Talbot with the toque on the helmet. Everyone was like, who did it best? And I'm like, the OG, Jose Theodore. Jose Theodore's got the toque on the helmet for the very first time. It has been a staple if you were a goaltender playing in an outdoor game. So that was really cool there. Fun game to get a chance to witness too. And still a couple more to go. I know that there is the, quote, Heritage Classic that should be happening in Hamilton, though I don't know what the capacity is going to be behind that. That game is in March between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres. We will see at that point. A couple news and notes. Unfortunate news for Seattle Kraken forward Brandon Tanev. He suffered an ACL injury and will miss the remainder of the season, the team announced a week ago. He was hurt during the Kraken's 5-3 loss to Edmonton back on the 18th. There are no more details about surgery and recovery, but they're going to be provided later. But just really unfortunate news is a guy who was taken and really was, you know, a very solid player for Seattle, and a guy that ate up a lot of minutes and was producing at a pretty good rate as well, and just a tough pill to swallow for Seattle. Toronto Maple Leafs forward Austin Matthews tested positive for COVID yesterday, head coach Sheldon Keefe announced. Keefe said the positive result came from a rapid test and that the team has had rapid tests produce false positives before. The result of Matthews' PCR test will be available Tuesday. He is asymptomatic, so we shouldn't be feeling any symptoms or anything like that. They do play tomorrow, and it will be very interesting to see if Toronto does, in fact, have him for the game or not. If not, they've actually been quite successful without him. Luckily, they've been above 500 for the last couple of years when Matthews is not in the lineup. And they're getting guys back, and they've got a lot of guys coming in and out anyways with COVID and short turnarounds and getting guys with fresh legs in the lineup. So it'll be interesting to see whether he goes or not. If not, you know, a lot more pressure is going to be put on Mitch Marner to play some big minutes and kind of carry a line instead of Matthews. But Toronto just cruised to a 6-0 victory over Ottawa on Saturday. They were supposed to play yesterday. That game against Carolina got postponed. and they're back at home tomorrow taking on the reeling Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, speaking of that too, that'll about do it, but a lot of games being postponed and not canceled, but they're going to be moved at some point. So the way it'll work, I think I talked about this on the last episode. If not, I'm going to quickly hear. NHL players are not going to be going to Beijing for the Olympics. That announcement was made last week. A lot of players venting their frustration about how a lot of guys work up to play for their countries. And it's disappointing that we're not going to get to see the best of the very best play for the second straight Olympic run. But there was a 2-week period where the NHL was going to pause to allow its players to go participate. Well, now that that's not happening, all of these games that are getting postponed, they're getting moved, they are going to be played in that 2-week window. And I think because the NHL wants to have these games played regardless, that's why I don't think they're going to allow fans to, like, listen, if that's going to halt play specifically in Canada, the league doesn't want to risk it. And I think the games are going to be played regardless, even if it means taking fans out of the stadiums for hopefully a short period of time, because I was watching the NFL this past weekend and those 80,000 fan stadiums were full to the brim. So I think 16 or 17,000, even half capacity, like put 8 or 9 in the building, spread them out, put 5 in the building and spread them out so that everyone's 6 feet apart and can still enjoy the game. But that's the rule in Ontario. But during that 2-week period, I believe it's in February, that is when all these games are going to be made up. So a lot of players have had some time off over the last little bit with all the breaks and whatnot. So that break was going to happen in February. It just got taken, you know, earlier, and those games should be made up and there should still be a full 82 game season being played at some point. Also, a couple quick notes before we head on out. We should be seeing the debut for the Vegas Golden Knights and Jack Eichel. We should be seeing Jack Eichel hopefully in the next, if not this week, the next week or two. And once that guy gets going there in Vegas, I think they are going to slowly start becoming one of the favorites. There's no way that it doesn't improve your team. And with Chandler Stephenson playing as well as he has, William Karlsson coming back at some point, Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty, who unfortunately is also injured for the time being. But, you know, once he comes back, if that team stays afloat and gets healthy at the right time, you see it all the time. Teams getting healthy and getting hot at the right time going into the postseason should be an absolute blast. And that is about it for today. A little bit of a shorter episode, but, you know, kind of got to my point on everything I needed to talk about today and continue to enjoy all the games. And I was looking ahead to the schedule and there are still games that are going to be postponed, like a game or two, but they are significantly less. We should be getting back to hockey every single day, which is the goal, basically. And that 2-week period, we could be seeing games continuously being made up. And so when we get a full 82 game season in there, and you know, we'll see what happens as the weeks go on. Happy 2022. Follow along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and enjoy the rest of the week. I'll see you next Tuesday. Until then, that's a wrap.